Why Save the Bankers, and other essays on our economic and political crisis. The financial crisis and its aftermath. In September 2008, the world witnessed the collapse of Lehman Brothers, marking the beginning of a global financial crisis that would reshape our economic landscape. As an economist, I found myself grappling with a fundamental question. Will this crisis lead to the return of the state on the economic and social scene? The answer, as we've seen unfold over the years, is complex and multifaceted. The immediate response to the crisis was a series of bank bailouts and stimulus packages. Many question the logic behind saving the very institutions that caused the meltdown. But let me be clear, it was legitimate to intervene to avert a systemic crisis. Banks are a crucial part of our economic infrastructure, and their collapse would have had catastrophic consequences for the entire economy. However, these bailouts should have come with stringent conditions. Shareholders and bank managers should have paid a price for their mistakes. We needed aggressive financial regulation to prevent the sale of toxic assets as legitimate investments. And perhaps most importantly, we should have put an end to the obscenely high executive compensation packages in the financial sector. The European dilemma. As the crisis spread to Europe, it exposed the fundamental flaws in the Eurozone structure. We found ourselves in an impossible situation. A single currency with 18 different public debts, 18 different tax and social systems, and 18 different interest rates to speculate on. This fragmentation made the Eurozone particularly vulnerable to financial speculation and economic shocks. Take Greece, for example. As the country struggled with mounting debt, it became clear that the austerity measures imposed by European institutions were counterproductive. These policies led to deflation, stagnation, and unemployment, not just in Greece but across southern Europe. Portugal, Ireland, Italy, and Spain all slid into economic turmoil, with rising unemployment, falling tax revenues, and swelling public debt. The irony wasn't lost on me. The same economists, financiers, and politicians who defended bank bailouts now hypocritically denounced bailouts of state debt, even though the financial crisis caused the public debt crisis. This cognitive dissonance and intellectual confusion plagued policymaking throughout the Eurozone. The rise of inequality and the threat to democracy. One of the most alarming trends I've observed is the widening gap between the rich and the poor. The wealthiest individuals have seen their fortunes grow at rates of 6-7% per year, while average wealth worldwide has barely increased by 2%. This concentration of wealth poses a serious threat to our democratic institutions. Let's consider the nature of wealth in our modern economy. Contrary to popular belief, most substantial fortunes are not the result of entrepreneurial success like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. Instead, they are inherited, passed down through generations. The Walton family, Paris Hilton, and Lillian Betancourt are prime examples of this phenomenon. This accumulation of inherited wealth creates a new class of rentiers, individuals who can live comfortably off their capital without the need to work. It's a return to what I call patrimonial capitalism, reminiscent of the 19th century. While today's version may have a broader base and slightly less concentration at the very top, its essential feature remains: the ability to generate a satisfactory income without the pain of work. The need for progressive taxation and financial regulation. To address these issues, we need a fundamental overhaul of our tax systems. The wealthy and corporations are taxed too little, while the burden falls disproportionately on labor. We must implement higher taxes on inherited wealth and corporate profits. Additionally, we need to close tax havens offered by countries like Luxembourg and Switzerland, which allow the ultra-rich to avoid paying their fair share. But taxation alone is not enough. We need meaningful regulation of the financial sector to prevent the kind of reckless behavior that led to the 2008 crisis. Banks are now bigger and more powerful than when they were deemed too big to fail. Without proper oversight, we risk repeating the same mistakes that brought our economy to its knees. The future of Europe and global economic governance. Looking ahead, I see both challenges and opportunities for Europe. The most serious threat is the potential shattering of the Eurozone and the European Union. The management of the European crisis has been, in many ways, a disastrous folly. By 2013-2014, growth in the Eurozone had practically ground to a halt, while the US and UK were showing signs of recovery. To save the European project, we need bold reforms. I advocate for a stronger role for the European Central Bank, coupled with a more democratic and transparent European decision-making body. We should also consider the mutualization of European debt to create a more stable financial foundation for the Union. On a global scale, we need better economic governance. The current system is ill-equipped to handle the challenges of the 21st century. We should replace assessments based on gross domestic product with more revealing measures like national income. We also need to seriously consider implementing a global tax on wealth to combat rising inequality. Conclusion: a call for economic and political reform. As I conclude, let me emphasize that the issues we face are not insurmountable, but they require urgent action. We need higher wealth taxes, increased democracy, and massive investment in training, innovation, and green technology. Unfortunately, policymakers are often doing exactly the opposite of what's needed. Left unchecked, capitalism leads naturally to catastrophes. Its financial system is profoundly unstable, and its distribution of wealth is radically inegalitarian. Unless we expand democratic control over our economic systems, I fear we may face another financial crisis sooner rather than later. The political reaction to such a crisis could go either toward the left or toward far-right nationalism. The choice is ours. By implementing progressive economic policies and strengthening our democratic institutions, we can build a more stable, equitable, and prosperous future for all. The time for action is now.